welcome to Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast program. The guest this week, comedian and founder of Weirdos Comedy Club, Adam Latta. This after that audience, I am pumped. What a theme tune. What a way to start the show. Now, I don't want to blow your minds too early, audience, but although that did sound as though I have commissioned my own in-house podcast musicians, that was actually done by me on GarageBand. I know, I did it myself. Whew. Welcome to Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast program. Thanks for listening. My name is Ollie Bettesworth. I'm your host. Now, what's the show all about? He says, trying to get over the fact that he's essentially in a room talking to himself. Well, I am an up-and-coming comedian on the London circuit, up-and-coming in the sense that nobody at all has heard of me, and I'm going to be inviting other stand-up comedians from the circuit that I haven't seen for a while back to my flat in lovely, sunny, gorgeous Mitcham, having a couple of pretentious lattes, sitting down and trying to get to know them a little bit better. Unofficially, though, the reason why I've decided to do this podcast is because it's very, very competitive on the circuit at the moment. There's loads of great comedians out there, and I just thought if I could invite some of them one by one, get them out of their comfort zone into a sort of intimidating area like Mitcham, ask them a few leading questions, edit out a few contextualizing sentences and disclaimers, make them seem like far, far worse people than they actually are, and seem excellent and wonderful and liberal in comparison, I can only win, and careers have been ended over less, let me tell you. My first guest is the wonderful Adam Latta. He is an excellent and original performer, doesn't classify himself as a stand-up. He does a sort of very physical clown-like stuff, and he's also the founder of the absolutely wonderful Weirdos Comedy Club. Now, here's the structure of the show, just so you know what you're in for. In the first section, we're going to be talking a little bit of shop as comedians. We're going to be talking about his style on stage. We're going to be talking about Weirdos Comedy Club. If that's not something that you are interested in, and as a comedian, you can forget that not everybody is. Just skip forward 5 or 10 minutes, and that's when we begin to start talking about Adam's love and hates, and I can really drill down and try and make him seem like an absolute monster. See if I succeed, and I hope you enjoy episode 1 of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast program with Adam Latta. See you at the end. I'm just going to level with you. I'm trying to, with this podcast, I'm going to try and delve into some sort of emotional depth or core of you, because I feel like on the circuit you're known as quite a happy-go-lucky, quite upbeat guy.
Yeah.
And I want to change that if I can.
You won't find anything. I've lived a very stable life with my family. I live a very stable job.
There must be something that you cry about at night, Adam Latta.
No, everything's fine. Everything is okay.
I'm trying to have a sort of Marc Maron WTF moment with you.
Okay. No, really.
Are you sure you weren't molested at any point?
No, all's good. Really nice family life, great relationship with my girlfriend, getting well with my colleagues, you know, just kind of happy, yeah.
So why comedy?
I like the fun side of it, I suppose.
Actually, the way that I posed that question, it made it sound like those two things were related. If you're so happy, why are you doing comedy? That's the reserve for manic depressives.
It is. That's the expectant, isn't it?
Yeah, but I suppose increasingly it is, yeah. You know. Actually, I remember at a gig once, I was talking to, I think it was Lindsay Sharman, and I was describing that I was on a new course of antidepressants. And you came forward and made this point. It's like, whatever happened to the happy clown? Why does everyone always have to be this sort of horrible, miserable wretch and tortured artist?
Yeah, I suppose the way you've recalled that anecdote, it looks like I'm kicking you while you're down.
Yes, it was very insensitive.
Seriously, Ollie, get over it.
Yeah.
Get yourself a wig. Yeah. It'll be fine, yeah.
Yeah. Well, some that's makeup, very much how I took it.
Wig and a makeup, yeah.
Cried about it need. That night. Yeah. I asked the doctor to increase the dosage.
No, I don't, but there's something in that I do think that, you know, that there must be as it's easy to go kind of like, oh, actually, the people on stage are putting on a front, or it's funny that they're miserable, but maybe there's also a thought that, you know, maybe I subscribe to a bit more, which is, you know, happiness can breed happiness, you know, joy can present joy, kind of, don't go on stage unless you're doing this kind of rock star thing of all wearing black Bill Hicks, yeah, kind yeah, of yeah. like, so I hate the world, what are you all laughing at, you know, more kind of like, hey guys, I'm going to fall over, and you're going to laugh at it, but I'm fine with that, you know, or what situation do you want to put me in, because I'm so stable that I can take any of your abuse,
yeah.
audience.
So there's lots of, you're a fan of like homemade props and the yep. kind of very, do you think it would be, it's fair to say that it's sort of like a kid with an excited with all his new toys. With all his new handmade toys.
Yeah, I like prop stuff.
Because that's sort of your energy on stage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Naive and sort of, you know, excitable.
Yeah. I just try and think about the kind of, if you aim for, instead of titter, the belly laugh. And the belly laugh comes from, it's that, yeah, if you, when you see people out in public and you think, you are absolute idiot, or someone's done something really stupid, that has to come from a place of like naivety, you know, and I think that's kind of what I'm aiming for, is let the audience think, okay, let's suspend disbelief, let's not think that, you know, I work in an office during the day, let's think that the person you're presented with on stage is the biggest idiot you've ever met, and let's just go along for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half hour, that this guy is a complete utter moron, and let's let him get away with the ridiculous situations that they've built up, you know. Yeah, and that they genuinely think that this is a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, the play that they're presenting to us, they genuinely think is high art, but actually it's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's very low production values. And
Yeah. Culture. I mean, but that also comes from a place of, like, not having the budget to do that stuff.
Yeah. But I think, like, if you did have the budget, you'd lose something there.
Yeah.
Because I feel like part of that, the fun of watching this daft play, is that this guy's made the props himself to present it.
Well, that's continuing from some other people who've done great stuff in that, yeah, like Adam and Joe, Tim and Eric are also from that kind of like that see everything kind of warts and all and kind
lo-fi
of, kind yeah of the thing, props yeah. are falling apart and yeah and Frank Sidebottom and yeah all of that is a paper mache world, I suppose.
Do you still go on stage barefoot?
A lot of the time I've taken my shoes off now. That's not like people think that's me trying to be pretentious and cool or whatever. It's just, I feel more comfortable without my shoes on. I try not to wear my shoes at work. Despite, you know, people will probably frown on that, but yeah, it's just a thing, isn't it? Just hot feet, whatever. Yeah. I suppose I do feel like, oh, look, he thinks he's Alanis Morissette or something like that.
Yeah.
All right, Bjork, get some shoes, mate. Yeah. No, it's never trying to be a statement. But it's funny that people... I go on stage and do something, like, absolutely mental, and then I go, but why no shoes? You're like, really? That's the thing you took out from that? Yeah. I didn't even... I never put any thought into that, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Weirdos.
What is it? Weirdos is a club that's been going for 3 years that's loosely a collection of about 10 or more comics. It started off as one of the worst nights on the circuit, and I would now say it's one of the best. And it's been a long transition from just being what was just a lazy open mic night to now a piece where we all do group work together.
Yeah.
No one on stage does a stand-up set. Everything is all written and rehearsed throughout the day, and... yeah, it's kind of sketch meets performance art. We do some pieces that don't technically look like comedy, but try and push it a bit further. And yeah, it's got itself a nice little reputation now.
You've got a brand.
Yeah.
To use a horrible word.
A brand. Yeah. I mean, it took a lot of effort to get where it is now, but I feel really proud of it.
Yeah.
There's nothing out there at the moment. There are a lot of alternative nights, but there's nothing doing what we're doing at the moment. There are no great, great alternative nights out there at the moment, but we are the only one in that specific area.
Yeah, I feel like if you were going to go to Weirdos, and once you got what the idea was, you'd kind of go for the recurring cast of comics. You'd kind of, you know, you want to go and see those guys, the Weirdos guys doing what they're getting up to. You know?
Yeah, it's nice. It's because also, you know, every show is different.
Yeah.
We write a different script for each one. that means that, you know, people can come back and they're not... We occasionally book like a special guest or whatever, who normally tend to be the same two or three people as well. But it's not, you don't go for the names. You go for, oh, today we're going, and there's some weird alien adventure is the storyline that we're going along for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's essentially ripping off kind of what the comic strip used to do.
Sure.
But in a slightly more modern, anarchic kind of way.
Mm. Didn't you hear though, Adam, that alternative comedy is dead?
Yeah, I've heard that. It's fine. We don't do alternative comedy. We do sketch. It's fine. I don't know. Well, apparently, all comedy is dead, but we still seem to get an audience, so I don't know what we're doing. I'm really sorry for what we're doing. Really sorry.
Well, I'm glad I've finally got you to apologise.
Yeah. Us and all the other alternative comedy nights that are doing really well and getting large regular audiences and... producing original work, I'm sorry that we're doing it. We're wasting everyone's time, and I'm sorry that it's been going on since the 80s.
Have you ever thought about throwing a few gags in? You know what I mean? So, Adam Lata, what's the first thing that you'd like to talk to me about this afternoon?
The first thing that I'd like to talk to you about on my kind of things that I dislike list... It's really difficult because, one, I don't really like hating stuff, and I instantly know I'm going to lose with this one because I picked something that, you know, is a bugbear, but you don't bring up in conversation because you sound like an idiot, which makes me hate it more. Mm. It's drugs. Look, you know, and I know that sounds like instantly you go like, oh, Adam, why do you hate drugs? Why are you being the man? Why can't you have some fun? Why can't you relax?
You're so establishment.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Establishment.
You've like, changed, hey, man. You've changed.
I thought you come from this kind of wacky, crazy world of, if you love the alternative world and you love alternate comedy and you love rock and roll music, hey, none of that would have happened without drugs. And I go kind of like, shut up, you idiots, is the general response. I've never taken drugs, and I've never enjoyed the company of anyone on drugs, and I don't get why anyone would. And for me, it feels something inherently selfish. I can't help but meet someone on drugs and go like, and I know it sounds like we're just sitting here recording a podcast and we're in a nice place of privilege, but it feels like if you're doing drugs, you're being lazy. And I personally have a work ethic of kind of, I do my job 9 to 5. I put a lot of work into that. And then I go home and I try and write as much as possible, because for me, that is the thing I've decided to do. And I've gone kind of like, I want to do that. Fine. And you go, well, that sounds quite joyless, Adam. And I go, no. There's a lot of things I enjoy as much as anything. Just because you don't like drugs doesn't mean you're instantly joyless. But it's...
Yeah, but if you took some speed, you'd get a lot more writing.
All the things that I enjoy doing, I could enjoy doing more on drugs.
No. That's not my point. Okay. I'm just saying that if you took some speed, you'd get all the writing done, bang... Then you'd have an extra hour or two to enjoy a couple of joints.
Name someone other than Jack Kerouac who's done good writing on drugs.
I was about to say William S. Burroughs, but that actually, in my opinion, counters my point, because I despise Naked Lunch with a vengeance. Have you read it?
I've tried to.
Fuck me, what a piece of shit that book is.
Yeah.
Honestly. Anyway, yeah, no, I can't.
All good writing that's been done on drugs tends to be about drugs.
Drugs.
Which further supports my argument.
I would say Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is a pretty terrific book.
Yeah, it is.
And most, I mean,
what's the subject matter?
Well, actually, it's a lot about drugs, but it's also a lot about the death of the 1960s spirit and the emerging ugliness of the
1970s. But doesn't it also like support my... I said it's a really selfish thing. You read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and you go like, yeah, these are the most selfish people ever. And you wouldn't want to spend any time around any of them.
You wouldn't, but for the sake of... I think the point there is that they're living this life to immerse themselves in that lifestyle so they can write about it.
Yeah.
And therefore... I mean, arguably it's selfish to people around them, but can't you think of the gift they've given the world, Adam, by taking all of those drugs and unleashing that fiction that then gets made by Terry Gilliam into this wonderful film with Johnny Depp? We wouldn't see Johnny Depp saying, this is backcountry, if it wasn't for drugs.
No. I mean, that's the other thing, is that imagination can't come without drugs. Like... you can't go dancing unless you've been drinking. You can't talk to people. And I think people use it as a get out of kind of like, you need this to do this. Well, actually, you can do all of those things without.
But why would you want to? Because you'll be conscious that other people will be speaking stuff at you.
Yeah.
Then you'll be worried about their judgment. So you might not say the witty thing that was on the tip of your tongue.
Yeah.
You know, you might shrink inwards. Or it might be that you
scared I might grow as a person.
Yeah. Or maybe you were severely beaten from the ages of 2 till 10. And what you need is a nice big lump of crystal meth in order to blow away the pain.
Yeah.
Are you saying that those people are just lazy?
This is the obvious thing as well that, you know... oh God, Adam's already made himself like a dick really early into this podcast, but drugs damage and ruin people's lives and make them homeless and ruin relationships and marriages. And, you know, that's obviously, I feel stupid saying that because it instantly feels like the most uncool thing that anyone could ever say. Like, why didn't you loosen up? Why didn't you shut up? Mm. We know this. Like, yeah, I know you know this, and that's what people... someone smoking a cigarette, the last thing they want to hear is, you know, by the way, that gives you cancer. And, you know, that's all well and good for me to say. You know, obviously, it would be more powerful coming from someone who had cancer to say that.
Mm. No, it's a shame you don't have cancer.
I don't have cancer. I'm not ill in any way. And again, that automatically makes me feel guilty, like I can't complain about anything.
Mm.
Like, you know, someone who goes kind of like, yeah, why are you banging on about marijuana, Adam? You don't take it, and that's fine for you, but, you know, I've got a really tough lifestyle, and I need it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to go kind of like, well, actually, you could make it better if you didn't, and actually that would really help you, be way more proactive, and that's the last thing anyone wants to hear, and that's the sort of thing that people just slap you in the face about. So that's the reason I probably wouldn't ever bring it up, unless I was directly asked on a podcast, what is something you hate?
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about it an awful lot before the podcast. I mean, as you came through the front door, you're like, there's no drugs in here, is there? Because I will not stay if there's any drugs. You haven't taken any drugs. When was the last time you took drugs? I was like, hey, Adam, want a coffee? Calm down.
If you go to a party and you say, I don't like drugs, you won't get invited back to that party.
Mm.
So a lot of the time I just bite my lip and go, like, I'm really cool around this situation. I'm fine with my friends taking drugs, and I'm fine with that. That's a cool thing. Yeah, we're all like the Velvet Underground. Oh, actually, I hate this situation and I hate being around people who take drugs.
But Adam, when you take an aspirin, is that not a drug?
You know that that's a ridiculous question. Yeah, it is a drug, yeah.
Yeah, but and you take that
yeah, it does.
To give you headache goes away?
Yeah.
Unnaturally?
Yeah.
What about Calpol?
Yeah.
Food, isn't food technically a drug?
I mean, yeah, if you're really not really, no.
You feel hungry and you get high off the sandwich.
Let's accept all of these things. Yeah, also, so I'm talking about illegal narcotics. Yeah.
Oh, so the fact that they're legal as opposed to illegal is where the moral line is for you.
No, I don't drink.
Immorality
or smoke.
Is dictated by the.
No, I don't drink or smoke.
So uncool, man.
Yeah, I know. But I can see so many people hating.
That must be
anyone who listens to this. I don't know who listens to this, but You probably hate me right now.
How long,
fair enough.
How long has that been the case? Did you just never get into it?
People hated me.
Yeah. I mean, that's been for a long time.
I've never smoked. I've never taken drugs.
But there was a time in your youth when you drank alcohol.
Yeah, very briefly. Mm. Yeah.
And then you just thought, this is not for me.
Yeah. I don't need it. I don't need it.
Would you never, for example, if I could guarantee that this glass of wine that I have in front of me, hypothetically, was absolutely delicious. You've never tasted a nicer drink.
Okay.
You will not get drunk off one glass of wine. Have a taste of this wine. Is that a rule?
That's, you've made that sound like a really delicious drink. Yeah, I'd probably give it a go. It's not the actual taking of the drugs.
No.
It's the kind of like, I suppose what I object to is that I can't have fun without drugs kind of attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the kind of, you must be some weird kind of uptight Mormon loser if you don't take drugs.
I was teetotal from the age of 14 to 22.
Yeah.
And then at 22, everything went wrong and I basically gave up on all of my convictions that I had previously. And now I am the shallow wretch you see before you. But so I can kind of empathise. You get, you know, even back then when I was a lot younger, you'd get all sorts of, or maybe even more pronounced, because everyone's like, oh, drunks, yeah, let's get drunk, yeah, drugs, when you're really young, and it's such a big part of growing up, supposedly. And I was always left out of that.
Can I go on to one of my likes? Because they're kind of connected.
Mm-hmm.
That I put down on the, or likes or loves, I mean, I've written, and this sounds way more pretentious, hardcore straight edge punk music. Essentially, I'm talking about Fugazi, who are one of the best bands. And if you're like an artist, performer, or someone interested in music or in any kind of performing arts, you should listen to and watch videos of Fugazi, because never has anyone like cared as much about the craft of performing as much as them. They're just insane, like the love of it all, and it spilled through to, like, you know, not just forming a band, but like, we're gonna think differently about everything. You know, we're gonna run our own record label, we're gonna wear black t-shirts at our gigs, no one's gonna hurt each other from moshing, you know, that we're questioning that you actually dance with each other rather than jump into and hurt each other. You know, we're not scared of being accused of not being masculine because, you know, we don't drink, smoke, or eat meat. You know, that we think actually is more powerful. And this kind of like attitude of, and that's where punk comes from, or should be, kind of just
defiant.
Let's not go along with everything.
Yeah.
And I think some people mistook that as like, hey, actually, let's just smash stuff up and let's shave our heads and
behave anarchically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, people who are listening to this know what I look like. I don't look like a punk.
No.
I look like a normal person. And I think there's something that, and go, punk is an attitude of actually, like, let's question something rather than, you know, let's swear at the government.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I've long been the one cardiganed figure at like metal concerts and stuff.
Yeah.
People going around with these huge luxurious manes and studs and black leather.
Yeah. Well, Crass as well are another group who kind of questioned that and said, like, you know, are the Sex Pistols punk? Not really. They're a manufactured band who dress like peacocks and kind of just
sell butter eventually.
Sell butter, exactly. You know, and for me, like, maybe it's just trying to justify what I do or whatever, but I work in advertising during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, actually, you know, you it's okay to have a job and it's okay to do work if, like, you try and live a moral lifestyle and, you know, you... And that's not just about being straight edge or whatever. That's about, like, just being nice to people, you know? And, like, punk thing actually... I don't know, I feel like the Dead Kennedys, again, are another band who, when they were popular, there were, like, lots of jocks going to their concerts, and they tried to rebel against that and this kind of MTV culture of... And I kind of see it coming through into comedy. For me, like, I hate football and I hate sports, and there's always been this kind of, like, the people who were really into sports or whatever at school were this really kind of macho, knock everyone down, and there's this side to comedy which is really aggressive, competitive, kind of like...
Yeah, and you're quite camp on stage.
Absolutely, yeah. And I don't think that makes you less of a man to go up and like not be kind of like me against the audience, or me kind of trying to be a better performer. I won tonight. You know, people come out and go like, I won tonight's performance. I was great. You know,
I don't really feel like the idea of being making you less of a man. That's never concerned me. I am a man. So by definition, anything I do is how a man behaves.
Yeah.
You know, I just am one. So what you basically, when people say like, oh, that makes you less of a man, just makes you less of an obnoxious asshole. Is what they really mean. Like being a man is like being fucking tough and kind of, you know, dispassionate and all that kind of, you know, unemotional and...
Yeah. So when someone goes, here's some really edgy jokes, kind of like some really awful jokes, and like, oh, I don't like that. I don't really get it myself. Oh, come on, man up. It's just, why are you being so offended by that? Well, actually, that's a really horrible thing that you've just said there. Oh, come on, man up, grow some balls. Mm. You're like, well, it's just lazy, isn't it? Yeah. Whatever.
Tell me a Fugazi track to look up. We'll play it in the background.
Blueprint. It's amazing.
Blueprint.
We called the new Weirdos Night. It's called Blueprint, which is pretentiously inspired by that Fugazi song. It's basically about them saying we don't really need the music industry as it exists. And there's a bit where they repeatedly say in the chorus, I'm not playing with you. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, yeah, we'll do our own thing. Which a lot of bands say, that's a really cliche punk thing to say, but the amazing thing about Fugazi is they actually did it. Mm-hmm. You know, actions speak louder than words. They went and they did their own thing. They made livings off of it. And some of them kind of slightly perform now, but I think they probably made enough to retire on that. You know, they're not doing that kind of, let's reform and go play more concerts. They did the albums they wanted to, they made their point, and they stopped. Oh, yeah, amazing to be true to their word like that. I can't think of many other bands.
Do you identify as straight edge?
Not really. I don't like dress all in black and kind of...
No.
I also try not to be, and the exception is this podcast, preachy about it.
Sure.
People don't like that. No, I'm a vegetarian, but people hate it when you go and say like, oh God, I don't want to be in a room of people eating meat, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And my girlfriend smokes as well, and it's difficult to be kind of like, I wouldn't ever want to go to her like, oh, why are you doing that? You're really
Fugazi. Wow, this is obnoxious, isn't it?
It is a bit obnoxious.
Yeah.
It's beautiful though. The live version is nicer, but
it sounds like a sort of squabbling child, isn't it?
A bit of it to that. It's nice music. And
what would you say to people that would say this is just noise, Adam?
It's not, is it?
Okay, good answer.
it's better than anything that Rihanna's ever done, and she seems to be quite popular.
What about Disturbia?
What about what?
I think you're forgetting about Disturbia.
I don't know this. Yeah. I'm not very up to date with music.
Look it up.
I've got to a point now. I'm 26. I know what I like, so I can listen to that.
I feel like I've got to that point as well. I'm constantly looking for more music and impressed by less and less of it outside of what I already knew I liked.
Yeah.
Or the exception to that is I've never really liked hip-hop before, and I'm recently really discovering loads of hip-hop artists that I really like, which is a whole new genre that I never knew I enjoyed.
A bit sweary for me.
It is a bit sweary and misogynistic, which is the two things I like the most about it. Oh, right. But in terms of the music I liked before, hardcore and metal and all that kind of stuff, I just wait for the bands I already like to release some new stuff and then listen to that.
I know that. Although, what do you think of the new Pixies album?
I'm not a Pixies guy. I don't know. Okay. I don't know it. Is it rubbish?
It's not great. They probably even know that. I mean, the thing about Pixies, amazing. They did four albums for 3.5 and an EP or whatever, and they were all fantastic. They're one of those that you could pick up and go, every track is fantastic. And then let's give it a massive break and then do one okay album. Yeah. What are you going to say? You know, if you're going to be an idiosyncratic band, you can't do what people are going to expect of you. You know, it's more them to do an album when people don't want them to than it is for them to not, I suppose.
Sure. Are you a fan of Minor Threat?
Yeah, I mean, well, they went on to form Fugazi.
Oh, did they?
They're kind of some of the same people.
Ian Mackay.
Yeah, is the singer from Fugazi.
Oh, well. Right, okay.
And guitarist. I like them. Fugazi are more experimental.
Mm-hmm.
Minor Threat are just like straight punk, really, yeah, or straight hardcore punk.
Are they the originators of straight edge, or is Ian Mackay the originator of straight edge?
I think they're generally associated with it, yeah, but like,
they're an anti-drug message in their songs.
Yeah, there are a lot of bands who feel, for me, because obviously, you know, I didn't grow up with that kind of generation or grow up really with punk much. It's something that I discovered in my later life and have felt like, oh, rather than listening to the music and going kind of like, I'm going straight edge now.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting that I found it interesting. I didn't drink or smoke, and then I discovered straight edge punk.
Yeah, and there was this subculture.
To go like, oh, well, someone else has been saying this, and yeah, like, it makes me feel less pretentious, and actually, like, wow.
Also less original.
They're quite, yeah, less original. But it was never a statement. It was kind of like, more kind of, this makes sense to me.
I mean, ironically, when people talk about vegetarians as being sort of pretentious and kind of preachy and judgmental.
Yeah.
People that don't drink are judgmental. You think that you're better than me. But actually, in my experience, when I was vegetarian and when I was teetotal, I would have so many more conversations the other way.
Yeah.
Whereas people judging me for not drinking.
Oh, yeah.
Or asking me why I was a vegetarian, and then you have to have a conversation about it, unless you fob them off with like, oh, I just don't like the taste, but yeah, actually, you know,
you have a reason.
I had moral reasons,
but yeah, people hate you.
Yeah,
you people literally, if you're a man and you don't eat meat, you are wrong. You're an idiot.
But it's because of the cliche.
Do you not like
being...
bacon? Do you not like bacon?
Oh my god,
you freak.
Yeah.
You don't like bacon. What is wrong with you?
Al Murray says it's the proof that God exists.
Yeah, grow up. Come on.
Mm.
Seriously, just eat some bacon. Just kill a cow. Come on. Can't you kill something?
Yeah.
Are you not a man?
Who are
there
you?
There are people dying in the third world, so you should eat bacon. And yeah, obviously those two are connected. Yeah. Mm.
Mm.
Come on.
Go and give the people in the third world your bacon. I don't want any.
Yeah, we all die, so eat a shark.
basically just regressing more and more into nihilism.
Yeah.
With every step.
Here's some...
Well, nothing matters. I mean, we're just floating around on this empty orb in space. And
here's some stupid clichés, so stop thinking for yourself and, you know, grow up.
Yeah, I remember I had a conversation with this Muslim girl once, and she was saying, as though it was the simplest, most obvious thing in the world, wouldn't you, but I mean, isn't it obvious that, like, God's put animals on the earth for us to eat?
Yeah.
Like, what sort of batshit fool or idiot sadist is God that he needed to provide meat for us, and he could do it any way he wanted, but what he wanted to do was create these sentient, feeling creatures that sort of run around and have their own kind of ecosystems and biology that we then have to mercilessly slaughter in order to get the food. Mm. Why not just have fucking bacon trees? You know, if that's the case, it'd be a lot easier.
Well, this is why it's nice to have, like, for me, the hardcore straight edge thing. And I think, like, look, you want to feel like I'm doing something that's stupid. But actually, look, there's a group of people who thought it was pretty cool, and they almost kind of got a movement going, and it was quite nice. And, you know, look back at videos of Fugazi performing live, and just to see a crowd of people who are all dancing and getting excited, and none of them are drinking or on drugs, it's amazing. Just a concert, if you go to a festival, there's just something kind of underneath that feels a little bit aggressive. Then when you're at a nightclub, you know that a fight could start quite quickly.
Yeah, it's intimidating.
Whereas actually, you know, you go to an art class or whatever, and when there's... people are being creative outside of drink and drugs, it can be so amazing. God, I sound like such a hippie, but
yeah
I know,
but you kind of are though.
I am, yeah,
so you're going to sound like one.
Yeah.
It does also annoy me when people kind of look back at old creative pieces of work and retrospectively claim them on behalf of drugs.
Yeah.
So they kind of go, oh, this is trippy, man, this guy must have been like on LSD.
What about the Beatles? Weren't they a fantastically imaginative, amazing group who happened to take drugs rather than... I don't know, people say they switched on and then they wrote Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
The drugs didn't write Sgt. Pepper for them. You know, it's a result of them being like a really creative group of people who kind of formed at a time when they weren't taking drugs. recorded and recorded and recorded and was so, for me, that's an argument of like being productive and for like making yourself do stuff. And actually they split up at their peak of drugs and they, I don't know, I mean, it ruined the Beatles. Drugs ruined the Beatles, actually.
Think of all the completely non-creatively revolutionary junkies there are out there.
Yeah, there are...
Just making really mediocre music.
Yeah, there are way more Oasis cover bands on drugs than there are Beatles. Yeah.
Are you asexual, Adam?
Am I asexual? Where did that come from?
Well, I just thought if you wanted to round off all of the things, you could also...
Is that the next logical step?
Well, I'm saying that if you didn't, you don't enjoy drugs or drink... The other thing that people always go on about as though it's the solution to everything is sex. So if you wanted to round off the...
I slightly take offence at that.
Why?
Because, hang on.
I'm just saying that if you wanted to have the perfect set of things...
Because I think what people are saying is that you know, all the others are doing some kind of harm to people.
Mm.
Whereas I don't think that that's doing any harm to anyone.
What, sex?
Yeah.
Well, it depends how you do it, I suppose.
Well, consenting... Ollie is the answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm glad we've established you're not a rapist.
No, thank you. Yeah. No, I'm in a stable relationship with my girlfriend, who I love very much.
And who consents.
Who consents, yeah. And there is no one is upsetting anyone with that.
I don't mean to say that just because...
All vegetarian non-drinkers are asexual.
That's not what I said.
Implied it.
No, that's not what I implied. Jeez. I was just asking for the effect...
Okay.
To say
okay.
if
no,
you
no,
had
and you got also, a rise out of it you
exactly,
got a rise
I got
out
exactly
of it.
What I wanted out of it, so but if you were asexual, because there is something that reminds
I'm not
me
not Moby
if I there's a I don't know who, what his name is, the big asexual guy. I saw a documentary about it.
Morrissey.
No, he's not a celebrity, he's just the guy that sort of heads up the asexual awareness online stuff, and there's a documentary about him and about asexuality in general. And
I don't frown on that, but
I don't
surely
know,
there
I don't
are better ways to change the world than that. Sorry, no, that's really patronizing.
It's not about changing the world.
It makes all of that I've said previous undermined, actually, to it's say absolutely. That someone can't make that as a choice.
Yeah.
Really go for it. If I met someone who was asexual, I wouldn't judge them in the same way that people judge me being a vegetarian.
The difficulty with it, and this is going off on a tangent slightly, but the difficulty with it is when you're watching the documentary, you think, yeah, it is a choice, or not a choice. It might they're arguing that it's a sexual orientation, i.e., they turned up to the like a gay pride march where there's all this awareness raising stuff, gays and lesbians and transgenders, etc. All these accepted marginalised groups, accepted within the queer spectrum. And they turned up saying, how about no sex? How about the idea that people don't have sex? And they were widely rejected.
Of course.
From the march. They're like, no, we love sex. And it's like, it's not about what you love. It's about the idea that people could have an orientation that means they just don't like it. But the difficulty is that sex is so awesome and kind of unifying. Most of the time, it's difficult to differentiate between whether someone just has a bit of difficulty with intimacy or whether this is just a healthy thing to be asexual.
This is on the same spectrum of me earlier going on about like the kind of whole this is different society. I'm scared of this. And you know, okay, I mean there's a very good, you've done that very well. It's a very good question, and I fell right into it. And I now massively respect asexual people, and I feel properly shallow.
Well, look it up. It's on Netflix. Open your mind and watch that documentary.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, the guy is creepy as fuck. That's the problem. That's the main problem.
But I'm not asexual. Maybe I don't object to being asexual, but I object to the grouping them all together. No, I see what you did there. Very good. Very good.
Yeah. Pretty much destroyed you.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Adam, what do you love?
What do I love that's on the list?
Yes.
Yeah.
Specifically.
I said I like dancing.
You love dancing?
I love dancing, yeah. It's one of the I think it comes from not being good at sports, and then maybe kind of like 18 going to nightclubs and realizing, oh, actually there's something that I don't mind, that look, I'm out of breath, but I don't mind it.
And right,
it's, if you love music, you probably should love dancing.
Yeah,
because it's like one of those, yes, yeah, it's weird for me to go to a concert and people aren't dancing. I don't get it.
Okay,
and but tell me, it's not like it's, I think there's a culture of good dancing versus bad dancing, and I don't mean I am a great ballroom dancer. I just mean jumping around like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
That for me is great fun.
How would you dance to this noise, for example?
Oh, that's just jumping around. It's not quite the right situation in this room. But I'd pogo.
Pogo.
Yeah, I'd love a pogo, yeah. Yeah, music isn't as much fun. If, even when I'm walking down the road, I'm the idiot who you see standing at the bus stop kind of bobbing their head a bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get a bit carried away.
Mm. Is it showing off?
There's a bit of that.
Mm.
But then also it is just more enjoyable to listen to music if you're dancing.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
And you don't feel self-conscious.
No.
Because that's what a lot of people say. I need a couple of drinks in me before I have a dance.
No. No.
Did you ever feel self-conscious about yourself?
Probably. But I think like you get to a point where now I've done so much stupid stuff that I don't really care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not like I'm the cast of Jackass, but...
Right. Yeah. Your reputation is already
in tatters. I have a lower threshold of dignity than most people.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Because I've seen you break out into dance at gigs quite a lot.
Yeah.
Backstage or whatever. Yeah. You're usually on your own as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
Don't mind that.
No.
Why not?
And people are like, oh, he must be on drugs.
Yeah.
You have one more thing on your hate list to cover, and what is it?
A stand-up comedy. But this is, I should...
Do you realise that this is mainly going out to stand-up comedians?
Yeah, it's just because I see so much stand-up, because I get booked for stand-up gigs.
And you don't consider yourself a stand-up comedian at the moment?
No.
Or just a comedian?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I specifically mean a certain type of stand-up.
Okay.
When I was at university, I used to watch a lot of stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of those things. Someone was saying to me the other night at a music night, they said, Wonderwall is the worst song ever written. Okay. And I said, okay, I see what you're saying there. We're both musos. And I don't like Wonderwall as a song.
Yeah.
But it's probably just because I've heard it so many times and what it represents. And I've watched so much comedy that I like a specific type of comedy. And generally, being at an open mic night is a really painful experience for me.
Okay.
Because some people start off a routine, and in your head, you go, I instantly know where this is going.
So you don't like hack stand-up comedy? Or is it generally...
Even like good stand-up comedy is quite difficult. Take someone like Rod Gilbert, who is, you know, well-acclaimed... Well liked, you know, tours to big crowds. I can't help watch his stuff and feel like I know where this is going.
Right.
You know, I'm straight away bored of this.
Are there any stand up comedians you enjoy?
Yeah, kind of, but even the ones I enjoy I've kind of ruined for myself now. Like, I couldn't go to the last Stuart Lee tour.
Right.
Because I'd seen so much of his stuff. Even Kitson and Dylan Moran. Instantly in my head I'm thinking like I want to see something. I don't know Also, it's kind of like you do when you're performing, you slightly see yourself as the person on stage a bit, and
yeah,
at the moment, and this probably changed, I enjoyed doing stuff as a group more.
Right.
And I enjoy being part of a group, and there's fun to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with stand-up comedy. People should
but you do
go
hate
and watch
it. But you do hate it. Though.
If I was asked if I would watch it right now, no, thank you.
Okay.
No, please. Right now, please don't make me watch any more stand-up comedy.
What if I was to say out loud one of my routines to you?
I'd probably enjoy it, and I'd probably say, Ollie, that's a really good routine.
But nonetheless, it. I hate you and your kind.
No, I can't enjoy it on the same way. Also, maybe that's part of it, is that I used to enjoy it a lot.
Sure.
And now I've watched too much of it. And, like, there are probably things, some people who go, like, I will just continue to listen to the Grateful Dead for the rest of my life, you know, just a couple of albums, and they'll be fine. But I think stand-up, a lot of it is, you know, different reworkings of a similar theme as well, which is kind of like, oh, this is a new routine, but I feel like I've watched it.
Yeah.
Which is quite difficult to watch, you know. And, you know, people say, like, I'm going to the same restaurant tonight. And, you know, you can't go to the same restaurant so many times.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it feels like with stand-up.
Do you feel like...
And there's a lot of show to it as well. Like, you think, like, it'd be fine, but, like, the expectation from watching stand-up is that you also have to laugh and clap and cheer with it at the right points. And, like, okay, maybe I wouldn't hate it so much if there wasn't so much expected of me watching it, you know. You were expecting me to laugh, but I also knew where that joke was going.
Yeah.
You know.
And also, if you are in the audience and maybe you're going to go on, but the, you know, the, there's other comedians in the audience and comedian and one comedian on stage, they can all kind of see most of the time who's laughing and who's not.
Yeah.
And you don't want to send them a hostile message.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't like that joke. But if they if they happen to be looking at you when that punchline drops, you sort of feel like you've got to go, just what? So they don't think that you're actively going, you're shit.
Also, booking stuff is really difficult. I get so many emails. I run a gig once a month.
Yeah.
So we book 2 guest spots.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're already booked up until the end of June. We'll take a break for, you know, you, Frank, you know, it's like you get so many. And people send me messages and I go, want to polite in, when it's mates I'll respond, but sometimes even those I don't have enough time to get back to them and say, look, I'm just not booking stand up at the moment.
See, I managed to fly in under the radar in the early days, when I was actually really flattered at the time that I was considered anywhere near weird enough to be at the night. I'd never asked to be on, because I just assumed my act's actually fairly straightforward and it's not particularly alternative.
Well, you're in the alternative world, but then we got a lot weirder.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah. I suppose from some of those early gigs when I booked Holly Byrne, and I was like, okay, this is the sort of act I want to book.
Yeah, of course, sure.
Who's going to be, like, racing an aubergine and the kind of, this is what I'm ideally after. And, like, you know, there are still some stand-up gigs that I go to and watch, and stand-ups who I go, like, oh, they're really great, they're really good up-and-coming stand-up, I really want people to go and kind of watch these guys. But it's not, you know, if I've only got a limited amount of time to put on a gig myself or go see stuff, that's not what I'm interested in. You know, when you go, people who are like, come watch this, and you're like, I would, but I just don't have the time to, you know. That sounds miserable, but yeah.
I'm just letting you run on.
Letting you run on. Digging. Okay, I do hate stand-up. That's it. I do hate stand-up because I feel like I have to watch something that I don't enjoy as much as something else. And if someone's on stage and they're like, okay, I would rather this was happening now. Or I'd rather the script was taken away from you for a minute.
Yeah.
Because like, when someone also used to say, like, I've seen you do this routine as well. And I go, like, I know that bit isn't improvised and that bit isn't improvised, and, like, just yeah. You know, this is really London-based conversation. You know, there is more interesting stand-up outside of London, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
When I go to a stand-up night outside of London, I go, like, oh, okay, you guys are more imaginative, and there's kind of, like, a feeling in the audience that they're... not been dragged here, or kind of like, yeah, just going because your mates asked you to go, sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you go, I've been to gigs where it feels like it's the event. It's like, this is the event that this little town has at the minute, and everyone's pumped.
Yeah.
And that's quite nice.
You feel a bit more welcome, right?
You're not performing in front of this horrible, entitled London audience.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Adam, for appearing on the show. Is there anything that you would like to plug or promote?
No, not really. I'd like to say, for those who are listening, who are fans, you've learnt nothing new. And for those who are listening because you probably don't like me and want to see if I'm smug git that you think I am. I've probably proved you right as well.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
That's quite selfless, what you've done today, providing ammunition for your detractors.
Yeah. I know there's probably, I know that there are a handful of them.
Really? Okay, well, I'm going to turn the mic off and get the dirt. Thanks, Adam. Goodbye.
Thank you, Ollie. Thank you very much.
Well, listeners, we've come to the end of the first episode of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast program, or, as it's soon no doubt to be abbreviated, OBDWPP, with Adam Larter. There's no way, really, of saying this in a non-awkward fashion, but Adam Larter kind of makes me feel a little bit ashamed of myself. I'll tell you, it's not just his sort of energy and his sort of positive outlook, which obviously a misery guts like me is going to covet, but I realise that he's got a lot of convictions and a lot of principles that I used to have when I was younger and have since kind of cynically and nihilistically grown out of, and kind of made me feel a little bit shallow, which is sort of the opposite effect that I was hoping that the podcast would have early on. As I said, the point is very much to shame and humiliate the guests and make me seem better by comparison. Now, that hasn't happened this week, but there's plenty of time for that. If you did fancy going and catching the Weirdos Comedy Club in action, which I heartily recommend that you do, there are a couple of shows before they break up for the summer. The first of which is on May the 25th. That's a Sunday. It opens at 7:40 p.m. for the show to start at 8. It's Weirdos Comedy Presents Blueprint Season Finale Part 1. Part 2 will be in June. Tickets are just under £4. There will be special guest spots from Holly Byrne, Phil Kay, Lee Kern, and loads of the usual shenanigans from the Weirdos lot, featuring Adam Larter himself, Matthew Heighton, Jos Norris, Stuart Laws, Gareth Morinan, and a whole host of other performers. It will be a great night, and for only £4, who could argue? Next week, I have the wonderful and incredible David Mills, a simply superb American comic who's doing all sorts of stuff at the moment and is one of the best out there at the moment. So do come back for the next episode next week, Friday morning. In the meantime, if you did enjoy the podcast, why not give us a little rating on iTunes, or maybe even a little review, and tell your friends and tell people that you liked it. Tell people it was good and that you thought it was good, so that other people will come and listen to it, because that would be nice.
So please do come next week, and I will be waiting for you and for your joyous return. Thank you for joining me. Goodbye.